From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk about conditionals. If we had known it would be this much fun, we would have worn our party clothes. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do each week, language experts and New York Times best-selling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hi, Kathy. Hi, Ross. I want to read something to you, and I want to see if you think anything weird about it. Wait, Ross sounds like he's excited to say something. Hold on.
Sorry, Fletcher. I had an exciting thing to say. We've got a wonderful song about words and pronunciation coming at the end of our show. That's what I wanted to say.
And it was worth it, Ross.
As a tone-deaf person, I love hearing other people do song, because I can't.
All right. We'll definitely have that at the end of the show. First of all, though, I want to read you a sentence, and I just want to know if you think anything at all about this, besides the content, but think about the words here. Don't worry about the content. It says, "But since joining the agribusiness-friendly Trump administration, Kennedy has quietened his criticisms."
I have something to say already.
I do, too.
Quieted?
It would be quiet. It'd be quieted.
Well,
correct. There would be no N.
You wouldn't think. So my friend Larry sent this to me. He said, "What is going on here?" It's from a publication, I guess, called The Week. Oh, it's a magazine called The Week.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently a number of its editors are from the UK.
And Fletcher, I just looked it up as you were speaking, and you may go on, but when you said UK, go on.
Well, it turns out that's what it is. It's chiefly British. Quieten.
Yes.
This is nothing I've ever heard. I mean, the two of you have a little more experience, at least with British English, having grown up overseas and in places where the British have had more influence. And so I wondered if maybe this was something that you'd heard before, that something could be quietened.
I have not. I'm beginning to second guess myself, though. I'm thinking maybe I have seen it or something. But when you read that, I thought, wrong. You know,
I did the same thing.
Yeah.
But the one problem with Kathy and me is that we mostly read British books.
Uh-huh.
And that's the sort of thing you might have just sort of blipped over. Because I had a habit of blipping over things a lot.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And you're a blipper too, Kath, aren't you?
Oh, I mean, totally. Are you kidding?
So, blip everything. So
Every now and then I realize I've missed a major plot point.
I know.
You know what
I
mean?
Well, for years I thought we were reading a Tintin. We had Tintin books, Tintin. And it was the British edition, and they had Sherpa. Tharki was a Sherpa, you know, mm-hmm. the guys who go in the mountains.
Sure.
And I read it for years as Shepra.
Oh.
And... Yeah, and I read that book, as Kathy well knows, I read that Tintin comic probably 1,000 times in my life, and I kept reading it as Shepra. I did not see the word. I just flipped it. So whatever. So I'm wondering if both of us saw quietened and just read it as quieted.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I mean, I don't have a lot more to say about it than that. I just, I thought it was really curious, and I've certainly never heard it before.
No, I would have given me pause if I'd seen it. I would have thought it was a typo, frankly.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I would have blipped over it and not thought about it. But if someone said it, I think I would have heard it. So, and I agreed. I thought it was wrong when I heard it.
Well, we have other questions and comments from listeners. We're going to open up with a word origin question.
Yeah, this was actually an interesting one. I'm curious. Ross and I are curious to see if you have the same knee-jerk response that we did. It's an email from Jamie from Maine by way of Chicago.
Oh.
It's like, now that was specificity, but that's not the question.
Hi, Jamie.
Said, "I've been seeing the word glitch popping up often in my news feed, usually about AI glitches in images. Six-fingered hands, anyone?
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm wondering what the genesis of the word is.
Hmm.
Can you enlighten me? Human response only, please."
Wow. That's funny. I don't know if I've ever thought about that. You know what it sounds like, though? It sounds like a portmanteau.
Glitch. Hmm. It does, doesn't it? Like,
it does.
I mean, I don't know what it would be. No, I don't know. I can't even make up a good joke on that one.
No, I was thinking the same thing. I'll try to get a good joke, and I couldn't either. Yeah, well, there is one idea that it could come. I mean, it's not a portmanteau, but it could come from the word for gliding.
Huh?
Let's first ask Fletcher this, Ross.
Okay.
Do you have any thought, like, when, the time frame, when the word glitch?
Oh, glitch. That sounds like a World War One.
Interesting.
Yeah, add another one to that and you got
it. World War II. Okay, all right. Doesn't it seem like wars create a lot of strange words?
It does, actually. This doesn't specifically come from the war. It comes from the era.
Uh-huh.
But it was used from the early 40s. My guess is it is from a wartime technical jargon sort of thing. It's radio broadcast jargon, but it sounds to me very much like it's jargon during the war.
Mm-hmm,
but
yeah.
I thought it was much more recent. I thought I picked this as a, you know, later 20th century word,
like
frankly.
Like
I thought it came
thing.
Around with computers. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah.
I did. But it came from, they believe, they came from the Yiddish glitch. G-L-I-T-S-H, which meant a slip, which came from the German glitschen.
Oh, okay.
To glide. And apparently it first was technical jargon, like Ross said, broadcast jargon, and they thought it was horizontal bar interference was when they first started talking about it, like glitches in the screen. You'd see, you know.
Interesting.
We used to talk about hash, and I remember when I was in TV, hash was when you get
that snow.
Yeah,
that's what I always thought. But hash is, I think, different. I don't
hash
know.
Hash was just, snow on your screen.
That's what I was
going to
say. Glitches are a little, glitches are a bit different on that.
Yeah.
I am seeing it all the time, and like Jamie, it tends to be about AI images. You know, you talk about image glitches.
Yeah, but I use it all the time for everything, though. I really do. I realized that. When I said, because I wrote that email, and I said there's been a glitch in their computer program, and now we have to wait till we get the royalty. Remember that thing with the royalty rates? I said glitch in that letter. That's what I'm just wondering. I think I say it usually on everything.
You know where it's really exploded? Well, this has been a long time now, I guess like 27 years. But when The Matrix came out, I think that was 1999, right? And so I don't even remember if they used that word in the movie. But ever since then, whenever there's a really weird thing that happens in the world, people say it's a glitch in the Matrix.
In the Matrix.
You're right.
Yeah.
No, when you said that, it's funny how that the power of that film, I immediately got a picture of that cat that came twice in the film,
right,
or something like that.
Oh yeah.
You know, that was, I mean, in the reality of the film, whatever. Let's leave that there.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I mean, the film isn't real, I don't think. I hope
not.
I know. Well.
Well, anyway, thank you, Jamie. Because you got us. I actually still, I go back to it. It just seems so odd to me that it started in the 40s. It doesn't seem that way. But now that I'm hearing Yiddish, I am hearing glitch. Mm. Yeah.
But I hear it as a lot of, I mean, it sounds a lot to me like a radio type thing that you would do.
Yeah, I agree with
to
that.
To me, it just sounds like real radio. And the 40s was big in radio. Everyone's listening to the radio, glitches on the radio. I don't know. It sounds really cool to me. It sounds natural.
But it does also sound like wartime jargon. I mean, I am not a tiny bit surprised that it came up during World War II.
Okay, the next one we have is from Ed in Vancouver, BC.
Hi, Ed.
And Ed said this. These are a couple of phrases I have heard recently that grate. And then he had,
great,
I forget the exact source.
G-R-A-T-E.
G-R-A-T-E. Yeah, right. And he has, what is that supposed to mean instead of what does that mean? Which we should probably do, or what is that supposed to mean? But we'll do that, next time, I think.
That sounds kind of accusatory, doesn't it?
Yeah. The next one seems to be haunting me, as I hear it quite frequently now. Is this a structure in American English used instead of the standard third conditional? Okay, Fletcher, before we get into this, we'll talk about conditionals in a minute.
You'll learn what a third conditional is.
Don't worry, we're going to go through the first, second, and third conditional so you can know this. And then he goes, this is the sentence. If I would have known, I would have. And he got this from the middle of the series. But what I find bizarre for me is that I don't recall hearing this until the last year or so. The ones used on the TV show The Middle were filmed in 2015, so it indeed has been around a while. But here are a couple more, and I'm just surprised that people who are so meticulous about grammar would never have noticed it, and he thinks he is. Here are a couple I copied. The first one quotes Landon Rivera, who posted a Twitter having to do with Beyonce. If I would have known it would have gotten so popular, I definitely would have done it more justice. Okay, Fletcher. What is wrong with that sentence? Let's repeat it. If I would have known it would have gotten so popular, I definitely would have done it more justice.
If I would have known it would have gotten so popular, I would have
done it
more justice. Yeah. I mean, I can think of ways to say it another way, but I don't actually know what would be wrong with that.
Okay. There is something definitely wrong with that in English as we know it.
Okay.
But let's first go back. Let's go downwards again. Now, do you know what?
No.
This is a conditional sentence. And this is called the third conditional. And I'm sure you're just waiting, champing at the bit to know all you can about conditionals, aren't you?
I think you might also chomp at this point.
Well, so we started out with if, right? If something
right.
had happened. So that's
right.
That creates the conditional. Is that right?
That does.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. A conditional sentence has two parts. There's the condition, which is if or unless. So you've got this condition part, and it's then the result, which is the possibilities or a hypothetical
right.
that came about because of the conditional, right?
Yeah. So okay. let me guess before we get any further into that, should the would have only come at the end then?
Very nicely
Fletcher,
done.
Fletcher, you got it. You
yeah,
got it.
That's it.
So instead it should be something like, if I had known it would get so popular, I would have
Correct.
Done it more justice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct. Because yes. what you've got, as Ross said, this is the third condition. The zero conditional is just like universe, like a fact, a truth. If water reaches 100 degrees centigrade, it boils.
Okay.
And that's the zero conditional. What's the first conditional? Possibly going to happen. Okay? If we keep talking, Fletcher will start hitting us.
We're getting violent happen. Again, Ross. Yeah, you got to watch that.
I was reading Latin again last night. Okay. The second conditional, Kath, you want to throw that one out?
That's unlikely or hypothetic. If I won $1 million, I would buy both of you Maseratis.
Okay.
I would not, though.
I can't really drive anymore. I don't really want a Maserati.
Okay, so don't worry about it. I'll send you a nice bundt cake.
I'll take the Maserati and I'll sell it. Forget that. Yeah. I don't drive much, though. Okay, the third conditional, that's what we're talking about here. That is used for unreal or hypothetical situations in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the key here. Mm-hmm. Okay, and we have if, and like you had it right, past perfect. If, you know, if I had or whatever, I would have blank. Okay?
If I had known that it would get popular, I would have done this.
Right, you got it. So what the person did here, so what did they do wrong? What did this guy, Rivera do wrong?
Two extra would haves. If I would have known that it would have gotten so popular.
Well, okay, but we can even take that part out. We can get rid of the would have. The key point is the if in the would have. If is basically saying this is, we don't know. And I would have is saying we don't know. This is what I kept going over it. Like, is it, and I want to hear Kathy because I know she's going to go immediately. It makes complete sense, but. So I'm looking at you right now and I know you're going to say it.
I have a reputation, don't I?
But when you think about it, and I kept wrapping my head around it, and it's like if is basically conditional and then would have. I mean, they're both basically repeating themselves.
Hmm.
Right.
Okay, you agree. Thank you.
Yeah. The problem is everything is conditional. It's conditional upon conditional.
Yes.
Which is the problem.
We have the technical grammatical term, which I'm sure Fletcher's going to love to hear. If he would have is judged non-standard because it duplicates the modal meaning would. Where the conditional protasis is expected to show past counterfactuality, had plus past participle. Which actually, if you listen to that over and over again, it does make sense. What Kathy just said, we're stacking probabilities, which if basically we're saying.
Now, can I can I say, though, just to upend the whole table, this is all good to know and fun to dig into. But, like, I completely understood the sentence.
I agree with you. I don't think ultimately
too.
It matters at all.
No, I don't think it does either. I completely agree as well.
I had seen something, I think it's right here, yeah, that it's possible that you're hearing more and more of it because people use contractions. So you hear heat of or would of, and it doesn't have the same impact, you know what I mean, in repetition.
I see what you're saying, Kathy, but oddly enough, I mean, we know the grammar, and so we know it was incorrect, but when we read that sentence, I didn't...
It doesn't seem wrong.
I didn't like it because he had two would of's in the thing, you know, it would have, but I mean... If I would have known, I definitely would have done it more justice. If I had heard that, getting out the would have gotten so popular. If I would have known it, I definitely would have done it more justice. I wouldn't have flagged it in my head.
Nor I.
And even reading it, I think I would have avoided. If I were doing copy editing, strict copy editing, I would have probably noticed because I have to notice it. But even if I would just read something that you had just written... And I know you never would say anything this grammatically incorrect, but had you just this once, I wouldn't have noticed it. I don't think you would have either. And,
I would have probably cut out one of the would haves because it's inelegant. I would not have.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking and quickly going through it. I would not have done so as a grammatical.
No.
No. Mm-hmm. I agree with Fletcher. The bottom line is we understand what it says. So sorry, Ed. Ed's gonna get mad.
Maybe.
No, but I mean, I think it is good to strive, you know, to be. I mean, it is logically incorrect in a way. We're saying that. So it's probably better to avoid it if you can. If you do do it, I don't think it's a big deal. I'll bet that like in 50 years, it'll be standard that it will not even be flagged in Fowler's or, you know, grammatical grammar books or whatever. I bet. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, now it's said to be non-standard.
Oddly enough, the first example he gave, the short one, the if I would have known, I would have blank, sounds wronger, if you will, somehow. When you just
well
have
said.
The little... Thank you. But when you just have the fragment, it actually sounds more incorrect to me.
Could you read it again? Let me just read
if
that
I
again.
Would have known, if I would have known, I would have...
If I would have known, I would have done that. I agree with you.
That's
a slight...
More,
you're right.
Yeah,
what do you
it
think,
funks
Fletcher?
A little more on your ear.
Maybe that's... Maybe that's... The beauty of having of repeating something three times, maybe it sounds better. I mean,
yeah,
I mean, like, we do that.
They say the rule of three.
Yeah, we do that a lot rhetorically, right? I do it.
No, but we truncated that. Just say this now. If I would have known, I wouldn't have done that. That doesn't sound wrong to me.
If I would have known, I would have gone to the store.
That doesn't sound that. But the gone to the store to me negates the sounding weird again to me.
Yeah.
If I would have known Fletcher that you were coming today, I would have. Not done that. Doesn't that doesn't
know.
Sound
it,
bad
it doesn't
to me.
Sound it doesn't sound that weird to me either way. So basically what you ought to say is if I had known.
Yes.
Which I hate to say it now, that sounds wrong too.
Yeah, that sounds stuffy.
It sounds stuffy. Had I known, Catherine, if you were, you know.
Oh well.
Okay, now we're gonna move on to Latinized spelling. What a fun little section
oh,
here.
Goodness.
As you know,
it is
Fletcher.
A fun one.
It is, that's why I said it.
Oh.
You were taking me to be ironic or sarcastic. Many words came into English through French, and especially when the Normans conquered England. And they were first spelled in various ways that approximated how they were pronounced. Then as we talked, got a bunch of professors got together.
Yeah.
Yep, we were talking about that, and they decided, hey, wait a minute. We need to go back to the prestige language of Latin. So they chucked out some of those spellings and they put Latin spellings in.
Hmm.
So Fletcher, without further ado,
we're going to ask you to give us the original non-Latinized Middle English spelling of certain words that have those extraneous letters
all
that
right.
we don't need.
Okay.
Right.
Like receipt, which is spelled, as you know, receipt.
Receipt.
And
yes,
just to summarize here, Fletcher, you're good at modern English. What we want now is Middle English spelling. This is a Middle English spelling bee for Fletcher.
Okay, actually, I'm going to plug these in as Fletcher cogitates.
Okay. Are there? Let me ask you this before I start. Are there vowel changes that I need to worry about? Like, are long vowels still basically the same here? Long and short
we're not
going
to worry about long. That's a very, very astute question. We're not going to worry about long vowels.
Okay.
We're basically worrying about vowels and specifically consonants. And as you probably know by now, certainly, Latin had certain letters that they put in words that we don't have in English in our words. In many cases, you're going to be taking out
letters.
Certain,
right.
Yeah.
All right. And Kathy's typing in words as we know them as they're spelled now. So, for example, they said receipt already. So what we have here is R-E-C-E-I-P-T, as we know receipt is spelled. So, okay. So the words basically sounded the same, can I say, but they were just spelled differently.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So receipt, let's say it was something, I don't want to get ridiculously simple, so I'm going to keep the C, but I'm going to make it something like R-E-C-E-T-E.
Be a little
less
creative.
A little less. R-E-C-E-T?
No, get rid of E-T.
Don't get Russia started.
Okay, it's R-E, it's simple. In this
R-E-C-E-I-T? The P just dropped?
Correct.
Completely out.
So it's not.
Completely out.
I see.
And do you know, just out of curiosity, do you know a very common word also with a P that this is related to? That we use in English all the time.
Also with a P. Recipe.
Recipe.
Yeah, recipe. Yep. There it is.
That's
it. Yep.
And in Spanish, recipe is receta, which is also receipt.
Okay.
So
that's interesting too.
Yeah.
But it comes from the Latin word recipere, which is to receive. So, okay, let's go.
All right. I think this is going to start to be hopefully a little easier than scythe. S-C-Y-T-H-E. Let's say it's S-Y-T-H.
No. But close.
Okay.
Actually, it's S-I-T-H-E.
S-I-T-H-E.
It's even.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like the Y because I always end up seeing a bunch of extra Ys in words from Middle English.
Not
that I'm looking at Middle English a lot, but it always seems like it.
I think it's a really cool looking word. I've always liked how that word looks with the Y. It looks sort of like what a scythe is in a way.
Yeah,
you sort of picture it,
you know? Yeah.
It's a really good word. But it comes, they put the C back in because they thought it had some connection with the Latin word scindere, which is to cut. And scissors also got as you well know, scissors isn't spelled like it's, sounds either. It's got the C chucked in there too to make it like the Latin as well.
They started spelling it that way in the early 15th century. Prior to that, you had it nice and smooth and no C.
And an I.
Yeah. I like the Y, though.
Yeah,
I think the Y looks way cooler. I agree.
I know.
I think it's got like potency. You know what I mean?
Okay, the next?
Yeah, next up is indict, which is I-N-D-I-C-T. That C always seems weird. I'll bet you're going to tell me that the Latin word is something like indictere or something. I just made that up. But indict, I mean, with dropping the C is all I can think of, really. I-N-D-I-T. We'd have an E on the end these days to make that I long, but I don't know if they would do that then. I-N-D-I-T? I-N-D-Y-T? I-N-D-Y-T-E.
I-N-D-I-T-E.
I-N-D-I-T-E. Okay. All right.
It could be, but it also, at one point, it was also E-N-D-I-C-T to make it really confusing.
Yeah.
But Fletcher, I'm very proud of you. You got very close. There was a vulgar Latin, a late Latin word, indictare.
Which is,
you were very close to it. I mean, you had it.
I've been listening to you, Ross, with something. I can't say I've learned anything from it, but I've heard the words.
I know. And apparently that meant to declare, proclaim in writing, which, and then accuse. And that probably, but the other possibility is in dicare, without the T, which is in classical Latin to point out. And then when you change like the when you do some verb changes, it became indictus, which means not said, unsaid. So it could be related to that one as well. We have no idea that
one. Wow. Okay.
But you don't say indict.
I thought it was as a kid. I remember reading that they would have the newspaper, the record, we'd get the record, and they'd have so-and-so, and I'd read it as so-and-so was indicted in.
Yeah,
I always read
sense.
It that. Yeah.
Well, also, because you got indicate, so, you know.
Yeah.
Which I'm assuming indicate was from the indicare that you were talking about before, no? Yes.
Yes, Catherine. Yes, yes.
I too have picked up Latin, Fletcher.
Okay, the next word.
Next one is mortgage. M-O-R-T-G-A-G-E. Huh. Mortgage. What do I want to do besides get rid of the T? M-O-R-G. I don't know how else to make those, except for with a J, and that seems ridiculous. M-O-R-G-A-G-E, I guess. Just drop the T.
Very good. Oh, it's that simple.
Okay.
Because that's because it came from the old French mortgage.
Right.
Which, do you know, when the, do you know the origin, Fletcher? This was a cool one. We did it a long time ago,
yeah.
The origin of the word.
I just know that that M-O-R-T must have something to do with death, right?
Yep. You got it.
So
it's a dead pledge.
A dead pledge. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just makes it all sound more ominous. I mean, not that anybody loves their mortgage anyway. But...
Depends if you refinance in a low interest environment, then you may love it. So.
But I mean, actually, though, it's not. I mean, because I would have assumed when you say dead pledge that it had something to do with like someone being dead and you take over the house or something. But it's because the deal dies when the debt is paid. So the debt is dead.
Yeah,
long
okay.
live the debt. You know?
Yeah, that's really good, Kev. I'm glad you brought that up because I had the same feeling when I first read that. I thought of like, what, you die if you don't pay or something?
No, no, yeah. It sounded very like grim. It's like, yeah. You know, we have a mortgage on our house here in Armia and it's like, or should we have one? I mean, you know. Yeah. But no, it just means that the deal is dead.
Yeah.
The debt is paid. The house is yours. Bring on the dancing girls.
Subtle. S-U-B-T-L-E. That B just doesn't make any sense. So much so that I remember, oh man, what was I was reading something with a girl that I was really interested in. And I said subtle. This was, you know, this was maybe middle school or something like
yeah.
that. And she looked at me like, what? I don't know. What do you mean? What? She said, it's subtle. So that doesn't
it's
make
still
any
great
sense.
There, yeah, Fletcher, doesn't
I still
it?
Remember that.
He's still reliving that one. Yeah.
So get rid of the B.
Yep.
Is that going to be it, though? S-U-T-L-E?
Nope.
That can't be right. I want to say, like,
no.
S-U-T-T-E-L. Let's do that.
We could, but it's wrong. I would not have guessed this one. This is S-O-T-I-L.
Oh, yeah, no. Subtle. We'll see.
So it'd be more like subtle, really.
But the weird thing with this one is it comes from the French, Old French, which was S-O-T-I-L, which in turn went backwards to the Latin subtilis, S-U-B-T-I-L-I-S. So the key question here we have is, we can see where it, you know, why they changed it, but I don't get why the French had S-O-T-I-L. I guess they pronounced it and then did what the French do with things that they want to make French. So, I mean, because in modern French, it's, you know, with the B back. I wonder if the French put the B back too, just like the...
I'm sure did. Everybody fell in love with those. I'm with you, Fletcher. As a little kid, I thought subtle was a word. I had heard subtle, but subtle was something else.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Kind of like when you see Segway for the first time,
yeah.
You don't know.
That's right. Speaking of silent Bs, debt, D-E-B-T. Let's just say it's D-E-T, debt.
A little fancier.
A little fancier. D-E-T-T-E, debt.
Yes, you got it.
Very good.
You got it.
That
good, Fletcher.
That seems pretty French, yeah.
Yep. Now let's move on to fish.
These are all the Anglo-French ones right here.
Yeah. Salmon.
Salmon, S-A-L-M-O-N. Salmon as it would have been written before. Let's make it S-A-M-M-O-N. S-A-M-M-I-N.
Make it a little more French.
S-A-M-O-N? No.
A little bit more.
Salmon. S-A-M-O-N-N-E.
No.
Okay, no. How are you going to make this one more French?
S-A-M-O-U-N.
Oh,
Samoon.
Okay.
Samoon, yeah. But they did have an S-A-M-O-N as well at one point. I mean, the one problem with those, it wasn't standardized spelling back then.
Yeah,
so,
that's
you know.
A thing, right? Yeah. Which just blows my mind. I mean, I understand... that would be a condition people would live in, is not having standardized spelling. Like, I understand why, but it just kind of blows my mind that people just, like, spelled things however they felt like they needed to in order to say that word.
Get the point across, yeah.
It's just wild.
I kind of like it. I kind of like the Wild West aspects of it. It's sort of like, God!
doubt, get back to that silent B, doubt, D-O-U-B-T, doubt, D-O-U-T-E.
Got it. Okay. Good show.
Hey, yeah. I just want to say, but it was also spelled, speaking of the multi spellings, D-O-T-E, or my personal favorite, which is impossible to me, D-O-U-G-H-T-E.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Which I guess would be doubt, wouldn't it? If I saw that, yeah. Then that's, yeah.
But that doubt one, guessing that they did, though, how did, I mean, why would they do that? I just, it's really interesting on that one. I guess they did, you know, doe doubt or something, you know, as in.
Well, I mean, when you look at Chaucer, though, there's a lot of OU, there's a lot of OU words in there. Yeah. That are, so, I mean, with the GH, and then the TE, obviously, because you would probably pronounce it dote.
But the O-U-G-H would have been, what you're saying was O-U-G-H, so it wouldn't have been dote more.
It would have been probably yeah. dote, you're right, dote.
So why would they do that?
Because drought was spelled D-R-O-U-G-H-T-E.
That's what I'm wondering. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Was.
Like, yeah.
Because I just am going through my Chaucer prelude, which I will not recite again for you, in spite of your desires. But drochte was, yeah, D-R-O, where's it D-R-O-U-G-H-T-E? Not a U, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, whatever. It looks cool.
Okay, the next one is No Man Is an Island.
Yeah, this one I think I remember you telling me was just without the S, right? I-S-L-A-N-D was just I-L-A-N-D, island. It wasn't.
Let's put back your favorite letter that you liked for a certain earlier word.
Oh, a Y?
Yep.
Was it Y-L-A-N-D?
Yes.
Oh.
It also could have had an... I G L A N D and I E G L A N D as well.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
But the G sound, would in this case, in Old English, would have been a Y sound. Mm-hmm. So it still would have been island.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's fascinating.
Well, I Eichland.
Eichland.
No, Eichland. Oh, that's right.
Not Eichland. Not Eichland either. It would be island. Yeah.
Eichland. I can't Eichland.
No, it'd be island in then.
Highland. Sorry.
No, no. I think the Old English would have bopped you in the head on that one. Okay, now we have to get going. Why don't we put that last?
Okay, we got an email from Joshua Rice, and he wrote, "Hello.
Joshua.
Hi, Joshua. I heard NPR's Here Now program that showcased your podcast. We love you, Joshua, already, and thought, gee, this is a wonderful thing. I have something that's right up your alley. I made a whole song with mispronounced words called, I should have looked these up, Ross, Vasquez on the Half Pike in New Braunsfels, which I don't know is correct. He said he's from Texas near New Braunfels, which is commonly mispronounced even by people who live here. And he said it's favorite creations because he likes the wordplay. He says, maybe you could feature it on your podcast so I get real famous or something. So all right, Joshua, baby. All we're right. Making you famous, kid.
A triathlon athlete from Arkansas got a scholarship at Texas State to play lacrosse. Vasquez on the half pike in New Braunfels. Vasquez on the half pike in New Braunfels. Had problems with his eyes, wouldn't dilate. He dropped out of school and he started to skate. Vasquez on the half pike in New Braunfels. Vasquez on the half pike in New Braunfels. Thank you. too many incidences in a row. She was feeling mischievous anyways. Irregardless, it's pronunciated mayonnaise. Vasquez on the half pike in New Braunfels.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Maybe you already know about naked short selling. Maybe you've personally shorted stocks yourself. But do you know about the time short sellers ruined a Super Bowl, basically?
For me, I was a little late, but red flags went up like, what is going on? This is really scary.
At Planet Money, we get the story behind the money to explain how money works. Listen on the NPR app or wherever you get your podcasts.